This is the Outback Recordings podcast, session 31. And as you can hear, we have an international guest today, so this one is in English.
Willkommen zum Outback Recordings Podcast, der Show für die Punkrock- und Hardcore-Community. Inspirierende Menschen, wertvolle Einblicke und spannende Stories präsentiert von eurem Host Benedikt Hein.
Hey everyone, welcome to the show. So glad to have you. Thank you for listening. My name's Benedikt. I am your host. I'm a mixing engineer, music producer, and I'm specializing in rock, punk, hardcore, and heavy music. So this show is all about that scene, about that music. I get to pick the brains of inspiring and interesting people from within our scene. And I'm here today with no other than Joey Cape. I don't think he needs much of an introduction, but in case you don't know who he is, he's the lead singer of Lagwagon, which is arguably one of the most influential punk rock bands of all time. He's also in Me First and the Gimme Gimmes, and he's touring as a solo artist. And today I'm gonna have a conversation with him, talk to him, ask him a few questions. And before we get into it, I wanna tell you about the selfrecordingband.com. This is a project where I help self-recording bands, DIY bands, make better records in their practice rooms. I help them get pro-quality mix-ready tracks that can be turned into professional productions, because I've worked with so many self-recording bands over the years that sent me tracks and wanted me to mix their songs. And some of those are really great, but many of those have the same problems over and over again, the same struggles. And I always teach those bands, I always help them get better results. So I kind of packaged all of that on this website, and I put out regular content. I make articles, videos, there's free downloads, there's a 10-step guide to successful DIY recording and all kinds of stuff. So if you are one of those DIY bands, if you are a self-recording band, please go to theselfrecordingband.com and check this stuff out there. I'd really appreciate it, and I'm absolutely sure that it will help you. So now let's get right into it. Hi, Joey. So glad to have you. Thank you for taking the time. Thank you for doing this.
Hi. My pleasure.
As I said, most listeners will probably know who you are, and I just gave a quick introduction. But if you would have to introduce yourself, what would you tell people? What do you do? What are you up to currently?
I don't know. I don't have to do that very often, but but I guess I would say I'm a musician and a songwriter, and I've spent the last 30-something years of my life doing that, and I play in a few different things. I have this band Lagwagon that I've been in for a long time. I have a cover band called Me First and the Gimme Gimmes, and I make solo records and tour with that as well. And I spend most of my life on tour. Yeah. And at home, I have a family and normal problems like everyone else.
Really?
<You know? laughs> Yeah. Of course.
Yeah. So your band Lagwagon that you mentioned, it's been around for, I don't know, some people say it's been already 3 decades. Some people say Lagwagon was founded in 1990, so it's 30 years next year. What's the actual year Lagwagon got founded? So how old is Lagwagon?
The band started without me as Section 8. That was their former name. When I joined the band, it was called Section 8. And they began without me in 87, I think. Oh, and then I joined the band in 89. And when I joined the band, I had a lot of songs, and I sort of took over and started writing most of the music for the band. First, I learned a bunch of the songs I already had, but quickly we started doing my material. And I think at some point pretty early in our career, when we started getting asked the question, when did the band start, we started saying 89. So the funny thing about it is that we didn't really pay much attention to it. And I think people deduce their own years based on when your first record comes out, when your first record was made. But everything that existed on our first record was recorded a year or two before that on a demo tape.
Yeah.
That we actually released some of that demo tape many years later. So it's kind of strange, but we say 89. It just seems like we're not being greedy. Because a lot of bands will say, you know, 87 if they're us. A lot of bands would claim that, but I don't really I think that we decided as a band that it is really the band that made the first record. When did that start? And that started in 89. So
okay,
there you go.
There you go.
Yeah.
So you're 30 this year.
Yep. This is the year. But we're also terrible about anniversaries. I remember a year or two ago, somebody said, oh, we have to do something in honor of our 25th anniversary. And I kind of said, yeah, wasn't that 2 years ago or 3 years? So here we are in our 30th. And, you know, people in our camp have been saying, hey, maybe you should do something for your 30th next year. And I said, oh, it's actually this year. So it's, I think we just missed the boat, you know, on these things.
Yeah. So no,
we are called Lagwagon.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, what can you do?
Yeah. So no party for the 30s as well.
It doesn't look like it. The year's coming to a close pretty soon. So
yeah.
Oh, well,
yeah,
maybe we'll do one next year.
Yeah. But you did something great this year. You've announced a new record, which is the first record in 5 years, I think. So that's a good reason to celebrate, I guess. And I don't know if it's just me, but this came kind of surprisingly. I didn't expect, when I saw that you announced the record, I was like, whoa, really? Like, we're doing a record? And how long has this been in the works? So,
oh, it was very quick, actually. We didn't spend a lot of time this time. The previous album, Hang, I spent more or less 2 years on and off in between tours, working on that album, working on the lyrics and the music, and working with the band for at least 6 months in, you know, a lot of rehearsals and development and collaboration. This record, we did a thing that, you know, is good and bad. We set the date for recording before we had the music. Sometimes that kind of deadline is a good thing for people like me, because I will just keep painting until the canvas turns black.
Yeah.
If I don't have a deadline, sort of like a 4-year-old with a paintbrush. So we set the deadline, and because of that, for a number of reasons, we were really rushed to make the record when it came down to it, or at least to write the record and develop it. I had a solo record that I had been working on called Let Me Know When You Give Up, and it got delayed. The proposed release of it got delayed about 4 months, and it was just enough time that it really made putting the Lagwagon album together a bit stressful. But we stuck with the date. I think all the songs were written and put together in just a matter of weeks.
Wow.
And you know, the weird thing about it is I feel like it sounds like a Lagwagon record. And it brings the question to mind, is a lot of time to make a record when you've been a band as long as us a good thing? I don't think so. I think it's better to just be who you are, not question things, and just make a record. Because this record, Railer, to me, sounds like a record Lagwagon should make. And I really like the record a lot. It was not pleasant to make the record, because I found myself in a studio for 18 hours a day with a click track and a guitar in my hand going, what sounds like Lagwagon? And then I found myself writing lyrics until 4 a.m. with a friend over some drinks, you know. Just the night before, I would sing a vocal, you know, like being at my friend's house, and my friend Asher Simon, who's my lyric collaborator at this point in my life, I've been writing with him for years since Hang. And it was very stressful, but the record, it sounds great to me, and it seems incredibly honest, and we didn't overthink it, and that must be a good thing.
That is a good thing, and it sounds awesome, and it sounds like Lagwagon. And I was actually about to say, if that was on purpose, like, was it the mission to make a classic Lagwagon record? Or,
you know, that's I've been getting that question a lot lately, and I honestly have to say not at first. In the beginning, it was just, okay, I've got to get some music together here. Little Joe, our bass player, had some songs. I had a bunch of ideas and songs, but there really wasn't anything put together yet. And I was about halfway through the process. I think I remember calling each song song number one, and then I would send it to my band from the studio. Song number two, send it to my band. This is over just a matter of days. By song five, I started thinking, wow, this is kind of cool because this is by design sounding a lot like an old Lagwagon record to me.
Yeah.
And then I started to get down with the idea of controlling that and just sticking to that as if to say, no apologies. This is the band that you like. This is what we sound like. This is what we do. And so the calculation, if any, came into it late in the game. But I do always try to say to people that calculation is not something that you can actually really achieve. Mm-hmm. I think when it comes to any kind of art, you can have an idea, but whether it happens or not, it still goes a natural course that you can't control.
Yeah.
Because there are many people involved, you know. You're making music, you don't really know what it is. I mean, have you ever done anything, have you ever created anything that you felt like you knew what you were creating, and then 2 years later or something, you revisit this thing and it's something entirely different than you thought it was?
Yeah.
Everybody knows that feeling.
Yeah.
Whether it's a relationship you had with somebody, you thought it was true love, whatever. These things that you do in life, sometimes in retrospect, they're not what you thought they were. So there is no accurate way to calculate these things. It's not about math. But I did realize halfway through the process that it was sounding to me a lot like an old album. And then the way it was produced by Cameron Webb furthered that, because him and I had a meeting and I told him that. And he said, that's what I want to hear, because he was an old fan. He liked the old records, you know. So in his mind, it was like, let's steer it that way. I think it's just all kind of luck, fortune, something. I don't know. But it's right on time for us, because Hang was more experimental, I think. And we make so few records. It seems like, you know, the people I know that really like the band are really happy with the records. So that makes me feel good.
Yeah, I think that totally worked out. And I'm curious, when you say you figured out throughout the process that it started to sound like a classic Lagwagon record, what are those, in your opinion, what are those key ingredients that make a song a Lagwagon song? So, like, do you even know that yourself? Or is it just natural for you to do these things?
Well, I think it's not really a constant or, you know, law.
No.
That you abide by. It's just, you know, you when you've made a number of records, the identity is made up of all these elements, these characteristics, which are called songs, you know. Mm-hmm. And there are certain things you do early in your career and maybe later in your career that become your own because you did them in such a way that when people identify those things, they go, oh, that sounds like this band, or that seems like something Joey would do or Lagwagon would do, or you know what I mean? These are characteristics, you know, and they're songs. And I can only say Bubble, for example, the first single on the record, that song, when I was working on it and writing it, I was sort of channeling Violins, which is an old song by Lagwagon that a lot of people like. And I kept thinking, well, I don't want it to sound too much like Violins, but I love the vibe of Violins. So I was kind of going with that vibe. And, you know, it's hard to calculate, but
yeah.
I think I forgot the question.
No, I just wanted to, I'm just curious what you think are the key ingredients.
Lost.
So the key ingredients to a Lagwagon song.
I think
song.
The ingredients are a little bit mysterious is what
yeah.
I'm saying.
Yeah,
and,
got that.
And I think the ingredients are definitely these characteristics that come in the form of songs earlier in your career. And so, you know, when you do things that maybe even sometimes to you as a songwriter, you think, oh boy, this is like shameful. We can't do this. This sounds too much like that. You know, not other people don't see it that way. You know, other people only spent the one day on tour or 5 days on tour that they saw you. They only listened to the record so many times. They weren't there for the whole process. They're not as, they don't know the details of it the way you do. So when you do things that maybe sound a lot like something you've done before, that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to sound that way to other people. Sometimes it just sounds a little bit like it did before, and they think, oh, great, they're back. This is the band I love, you know? So it's a tricky thing. I would never want to be in a band that just kept making the same records. I see that in some bands that I wouldn't name because respectfully, but I think there are bands that just kind of make the same record over and over again. And you can almost like say, oh, there's that song from that record and they did it again, but it's not as good this time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's something that I never want to do in my life. But, you know, to be derivative of yourself is okay. So I don't know if that answers the question,
yeah,
but
it
is complicated.
Yeah, it sure is. And I didn't expect you to know an answer to that, but I was just curious.
Well, I like to try to be objective and think outside of my box and my bubble. You know, that I live inside of this thing. And you know, I often say that when people ask you, oh, what's your favorite Lagwagon song? When they ask me that, I often say, well, you know, it's kind of difficult to be objective about your own music. It's really hard to understand the details of your band. I mean, often you see things one way for years and then you realize, boy, that's not right. I think the important thing is to not think about it.
Yeah.
I've been saying that forever. I mean, you just have to do what comes naturally, even if it is slightly derivative of something you've done before, or, you know, as long as your emotion is there and your conviction's there and the lyrics and in the sound and the feel and the dynamic and the band is behind it. And my band absolutely loves the new record. I mean, they just kept telling me afterwards, like, dude, I love this record, you know? So something was right.
Yeah.
And it happened really fast. And it's a big lesson for me because maybe that's the way I need to start making records. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, haven't you done something like that actually with the 1 week record project thing? That's the theme of that, basically, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's precisely accurate. I mean, you're right on with that. That is the idea, the philosophy being don't overthink it. Don't give yourself enough time. And Lagwagon took on a manager about a year ago, and I am so grateful because she is just amazing. And she's like the den mother that we always needed because we're a bunch of irresponsible idiots running around with our heads cut off. You know what I mean? Like, we'd rather drink another beer than actually work. And it's great to have somebody that says to you, look, you know, you got to get to work. You got to do this. You got to do that. Doesn't change the quality of the work, but if it's up to us, we'll wait 9 years again to make a record. So, you know, it's interesting because that's the 1 week motto. And that's something that I realized when I started doing it. It's much more simple because in the beginning, 1 week records was just acoustic. You know, I would bring a songwriter in with his guitar and maybe I'd have a piano there, and there wasn't a ton of instrumentation. Now those records are turning into full band records, and which is great. I love it. And we're trying to operate under the same idea. You know, we're trying to keep making these records with these time constraints and put these restraints on ourselves so that we don't overthink it and we make natural decisions and we keep it closer to the original incarnation of the idea of what the song is. I think it's working. I don't know. You know, it's harder when you bring drums in the room.
Yeah, it is. It sure is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking about being objective with your stuff, you talked about Cameron Webb, who produced the Lagwagon record.
Yeah.
I love his work. I mean, I'm a record producer, mixer myself, so I'm naturally interested in that. Was he also involved in the writing production part of the project, or was he just in quote unquote engineering?
He has traditional aspects of how he produces records for sure. And that's what I would call a traditional aspect, the writing process. I mean, that's my thing. You know, when I produce a record, I'm all about the song. I mean, I'm all about the pre-production and the discussion of how to get to the soul of the song, whether it be tempo, key, you know, an arrangement. These things, to me, I see myself as more of an arranger than a producer. Cameron has definitely got some of that traditional stuff, but he's also really keeps his eye on this. He's got that idea that he wants to keep the purity of the band, which is also really cool when you've already got a guy like me in the band that's worrying about all those other things.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? So, you know, we made a good team. It was really, really brief. We did the whole record so fast. I can honestly tell you that there wasn't enough time for him to do too much of that stuff. But he would on occasion go, what if he did this, you know? And, you know, not nearly as much as I do when I work on a record with somebody, but it's a different approach, the way I do things. But he did do a little of that. And there were definitely things that were brought to the table that he said, I don't like that. And that's producing, you know?
Yeah.
You want a producer to do that. I don't want to work with somebody who doesn't have an opinion.
Yeah.
Because then they're just called engineers.
Yeah,
but it's a very important thing that there's chemistry, you know, because the artist has to trust the person. And I mean, we didn't have a lot of time.
Yeah.
But he does do that.
Yeah, that's cool. Because, I mean, you're totally right. Normally you want a producer to do that. But there are bands who just don't let anybody have a say in their, like, songs and their writing. So
I've produced some of them.
Yeah. Well, that gets tough then. If somebody like you produces a band who doesn't want a producer, that gets tough.
Well, you know what I did years ago? I made a sort of mission statement that I bring out verbally, you know, and vocally before I go into the studio with someone. And it goes something like this. You're going to make a Joey record. This is your Joey record. You can make lots and lots of records in your life, but this one is a Joey record. So you have to trust me and you have to understand we're going to collaborate because I'm not here to press buttons. I'm here to make music. I'm about the arrangement. I explain to them what we're doing. And when we go into it, I tell them they're going to have to really open up their mind and let go of those things. And I give them a small guarantee that they'll be pleased later. You know, I just say, look, I'm confident enough in what I've done and what I do that you will appreciate this record. You may look back on it and go, what is that? But hey, you did it. You did your Joey record. Now move on and go do your other records. You know, it's just, that's how that you have to have that kind of relationship with somebody. They have to look at it like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, Cameron and I had that discussion a couple times, you know, making a record with anybody when you're a producer and you're being produced. It's not that easy. I mean, my wheels are always turning. I always have so many ideas. So when somebody's saying to me, hey, man, I think, you know, we should do this. I'm like, yeah, what do you know? I might not be the best subject. I could be the irony of this whole thing. But I have to tell you, I do understand it, you know. And there are a lot of people that, I mean, I've worked with people that every single thing, it's just so, so precious to them. And I mean, like, even one note of a guitar being slightly out of tune, the way that sounds to them, because they got used to that on a demo they made, and they're just married to it. And you have to help people with that, because a lot of songwriters and musicians can be very type A or even obsessive. You have to help them with that. I mean, if anything, it's good for them to break them of those things.
Yeah, good answer. Awesome. Let's talk about the record itself again. Like, what's actually on the record? What are your main themes or topics, lyric-wise? Like, what are the songs about and why?
I think it's a little bit all over the place. But there was one thread. There's sub-threads, but... I don't know. I when I get asked a question like this, I usually have to sit and think of the lyrics. Let Me Know When You Give Up was a much more conceptual record, and as well as Hang. I think Let Me Know When You Give Up was a very hopeful record, and I'm going back to that record because since I spent so much time on those lyrics and I had such a clear idea of what I wanted the counterparts to achieve together, I mean, all of the parts to build this overall view, I spent so much time on that, and as I did with Hang, and I had themes that were through, you know, that went through the whole record. This record was written much more quickly, and what I can say is that it had less hope in it than Let Me Know When You Give Up, because at the core of Let Me Know When You Give Up was, let me know when you give up, we'll stop worrying about all these problems in the world coming down on us, crushing us. It's just so hard to be alive sometimes with all the worry, and we'll go have a beer and we'll have a nice conversation and we'll remember the simple things. That was very clearly like what I was going for with that record. But Railer, there's a little more tongue in cheek, you know, there's a little more humor. There's definitely throwback in the music, and lyrically there's more anger. I was ready for that. But overall, I think it's just like anything else I write. I mean, I express my woes and worries in my life and the things I see, whether they be political or just emotional or philosophical. Yeah. I don't know. It's a difficult question to give an answer to as far as conceptual status, because it doesn't, I don't know that the record holds that the way other records are written do.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. It's not that overarching theme over the whole record as it is mm-hmm. with the other record. But I'm just so curious about the lyrics, because your lyrics are probably the most favorite thing for me on everything you do. Like, I really like your lyrics. And I was wondering when you're welcome. So, and when you write two records in a pretty short amount of time, like your solo record, the Let Me Know When You Give Up, and the Legwagon record, Railer, like, how do you come up with that, this many songs, and all of them are just so great, like lyrically? There's not one song where you think like, oh, like, okay, now he didn't know what to say. Like, you never have that feeling when you listen to your songs. And do you ever have something like this classic writer's block, or is it just something you do naturally?
I have had writer's block in my life, but I think, I don't know if I've evolved past it or if I just came to the realization that writer's block is another way of saying you stopped writing. Mm. Not everything you write is going to be something that resonates, but you have to continue to write. I mean, I think you have to just, what do they say? A writer writes. I mean, I think the reason that it's not entirely impossible for me to do two records back to back with lyrics, well, there's two reasons. One, I write all the time. You know, I write every time I have, I could, in this conversation we're having right now, you might say something or I might say something that I think is profound, and I will write it down. I spend a lot of time writing little things on my cell phone that happen in conversation over a drink with a friend when we're just talking about fucking Donald Trump or something, you know, yeah. Just anything. And the other part of it that's made things a little easier for me is I have a writing partner now, something I wanted 25 years ago. I mean, I loved Elton John growing up, you know, and he had this lyricist named Bernie Taupin. And when I was a little kid, I used to think, when I first started writing songs, I was probably 11 or 12 years old. And I used to think, that's the way you do it, you know, because I like music, but I don't care about lyrics. That's what I used to think, you know. It was before I read a lot of books and you know, maybe started to enjoy word acrobatics and poetry and whatever it is, you know, that words achieve. The emotion is something you have to learn just like anything else. But I always loved the idea, but then I found that I was starting to write lyrics that sounded so much like me that when I would partner with people on lyrics, it never really worked until I found this guy. And he was there the whole time. He's one of my closest friends, Asher Simon. He's brilliant. He's fucking brilliant. And so the lyrics on the last three records that I've made, I wrote with Asher. And man, it's a lot easier when you write with somebody else that you trust, because you're bouncing ideas around and they bounce back. And then this fire starts. And I don't ever want to go back.
Yeah, that sounds great. That sounds like a dream.
And we're so much in sync, him and I, that I don't feel like the lyrics have changed at all. You know, it's interesting. It's just, if anything, he's helping me say what I want to say with, it's easier.
That's the most interesting part, actually, because you would expect maybe the lyrics to change, but if that's not the case, if it's even more you, basically, or boiled down to the essence of what you want to say, then that's the best thing that can happen.
Well, he's so smart because he recognized that very early on when we started doing this, that these lyrics have to be what I'm trying to say. But, you know, when you're writing anything, you might go to the library and get a whole bunch of books on the subject. Like, for example, I was writing the song Surviving California for the album, and I went and I got all these books on gentrification and, you know, real estate and the wealth issues, you know, class issues, socioeconomic stuff. And I read like 12 books in a week. I was just going through these books, pretty bored, but trying to get background for this simple song that's going to have 20 lines. You know, it's funny, you do all this research, right? Well, having a co-writer, having somebody like a producer when it comes to music, or having a co-writer when you write music or lyrics, and especially lyrics, is a lot like research. It's like, that guy is my thesaurus. That guy's my dictionary. He's my encyclopedia. He's right there. And we've known each other so long. He also knows my music. He's a fan. He understands the way I think. So it's not something I don't think everybody can find. It took me 30 years to find it, but 20-something years. But yeah, it's cool. It's very cool. But it has to work right. Otherwise, you are going to be doing something that isn't entirely your own in your view. And you have to sing it. I mean, I have to believe in the things I do. I'm going to have to go on tour and sing these things for years. You know, if I don't believe in what I sing, it's going to get old really fast.
Yeah, it does. It does. Absolutely. What does Railer mean in the context of that record? Why is the record called Railer?
Okay, Railer comes from this guy that we called Buoy, which is a floating thing in the ocean, a buoy. When I was a kid, the community I came from was full of skateboarders and surfers, and we mostly surfing, you know, in the 70s. And this guy, Scott, who was an older guy that I knew, who was one of these guys that could barely speak English. You know, he was a bro. He used to make up words, you know, and he's the first guy I ever heard say this word, railer. And railer meant to be sort of a negative thing, but a little bit funny. Like you know, when someone says, that's bogus.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same kind of thing. It's a real word, or it's bogus, but, and railer is not. But sometimes, like, words are interesting that way. They can just have a sound. And I think it kind of encapsulates sonically the exact emotion that it's meant to. In other words, when you say that's railer, it just, you think of the word rail, you think, I don't know, and I love it. I always love this word. This word made its way into my band through certain members that grew up in the same area, and it became, I think I put it in a song called Falling Apart way back when we made Blaze, and then people started to know the word, and then I don't know. It's kind of strange. Just there's so many bands we've toured with that say Railer all the time. I mean, it came from this little surf guy, this dude in a tiny town that was just like a lifer in the surfing world. And here it is. Like, people know what it is. And so when I started thinking the album sounded throwback and had these elements of old Lagwagon, I was talking to Little Joe, our bass player, about it. We were sharing a hotel room when we were recording the album. And I didn't have a title. I was throwing titles around. And I said to him, what if we just call it Railer? And he was like, I love that. And then we talked and we came up with the album, the cover. We came up with the concept that kind of best illustrated, like, if we go back to 1992, what was Railer then? And it was these rollerblade guys. And we wanted it, you know, Lagwagon is always, you know, with the exception of a couple album covers, most of our old album covers especially had a certain amount of levity. There was a little bit of humor, you know, like Let's Talk About Feelings. It's a very serious record lyrically, but the cover is like about as silly as it gets. Like, hey, you know, and Haas and, you know, Trashed and Duh. I mean, that was our thing. So I thought we should have levity, and Railer just worked. And then we shot the album cover. My friend Athena Lonsdale, who's just fucking amazing. I give her a concept that's so abstract sometimes or so weird, like Hang, the Noose, and the Bees. And she goes, 2 days later, she sends me that photo. You know, she's that person. She sent us the photo for Railer a week later, and I saw it, and we just went, oh my God, it's perfect. You know? She totally, totally got it. Sorry, long answers.
No, that's cool. That's amazing. Like, love to hear that story, and I never thought of it like that. So that's not a word here, so I don't know, obviously.
Yeah.
But that's awesome. When you say you were brought up like in the surfer skateboarder world, like this kind of thing. How was your introduction to punk rock and the music you were then making? Because I mean, we are influenced now by bands like Blackwagon, like what you did, but how did you get to even start or do this? I mean, new what you did there back then. And what were your influences?
Well, I was born and raised in Southern California, and Southern California and Northern California for that matter, and Central California. I lived in Central California, you know, but Southern California, Los Angeles and Orange County were closest to me. And a lot of the bands even closer to me was this Nardcore scene, which was Ventura and Santa Barbara. These are the cities. This is where I grew up. I grew up in Camarillo, then Santa Barbara, in a town called Goleta, where Lagwagon formed. That's little towns, you know, and they're on the beach or near the beach. And people, you know, young kids, there's different things that they get involved in and do, you know. And where I lived, pretty much everybody surfed. You either surfed or you were a nerd.
Yeah.
I think I was kind of both, but or maybe I was a nerd pretending to be a cool kid, or I don't know, but it doesn't matter, because my introduction to punk rock, it was just a matter of who I was surrounding myself with and what I was interested in. And, when I went to high school, that's really when it started. I heard something in like eighth grade, like the first Dead Kennedys record, Sex Pistols. But when I went to the ninth grade, which is the beginning of our high school, I met a guy named Matt Davis. Actually, I was playing a party. I was playing drums, and he kind of showed up, and there were so few punks in our town. I don't know. I got kind of kidnapped, honestly. I mean, I was 14 and I had these like older punk guys that were like, you know, shooting drugs and just really scary. And they just said, you should drum in my punk. You know, I got kind of drafted into this band called Urban Assault. And through those guys and other people in our tiny, tiny little punk scene in high school, you know, I just began to discover all the Black Flags and all the Los Angeles bands and the Orange County bands like Descendants, and all these bands came in. So that was, you know, I fell in love with those records. Before that, I had mostly listened to like hard rock and heavy metal, things that existed before it. So it was a real natural progression, but I always liked pop music too. So that's the thing about punk. I mean, punk is like just a really heavy version of like folk and pop music. My parents grew up listening to folk music and the Beatles, and they just see punk as like sped up pop music really most of the time. And sometimes with a little bit more monotone to it. You know? But anybody who's 15 years old is kind of angry inside, you know, everybody's going through their physical changes. It's very natural that punk makes sense, you know, at least back then when it wasn't. Now there's just everything's a little bit punk and everything's a little bit like commercial. I don't know that it was a simpler time. There were less bands. I mean, people never talk about this when they talk about how things have changed. They never cite the obvious thing. There are just way more people now.
Yeah,
that's way true. More people. People are so busy talking about like the credibility and the convictions that other people have in the arts, But it's, come on, it's different. I swear to God, there were 100 bands in the 70s. You know what I mean?
That's crazy.
Like, yeah. I'm not kidding. Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. And with punk, you know, it was like there were the British, there were the American bands, we had the West Coast bands, and we had the New York bands, and there were a couple bands in the Midwest, in the middle of the country. And those bands were like mysterious, you know? No cell phones, no internet. So it was very appealing to me. And that was my introduction to it. And I started playing. I was a drummer. And eventually, when I became independent, drums were too big to carry and too loud to play. And I started playing guitar more and more. Then eventually I'm in a band playing guitar, and the singer's an asshole, and he gets kicked out. And we're in the middle of recording a demo, and somebody says, "You try to sing." And I sing, really? Okay. So I end up being a singer. I didn't really ask for this job.
But you stuck with it for pretty long now. So
yeah, I'm very, very fortunate. I definitely do not complain. I know how lucky I am.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Great, great life.
Yeah, that's a great story. I didn't know that. So that actually would lead to some questions that I got from the audience, if you don't mind. Like, we have like 15 minutes left or so. So if you don't mind, I would ask you a couple of questions from my listeners. They submitted them before. And what you just said would be like, I could like go to a question which kind of is on that topic. So,
great.
Thanks for doing that. Moritz is asking, from your perspective, how did the punk rock scene and also the part of the music industry that you're in change since the 90s? What are the positive and the negative sides of that evolution?
I feel like I just answered
that
question.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
That's funny. I mean, there's a lot more people now. You know, that's the main change. I mean,
even compared to the 90s?
Listen, I don't think people's intentions change. I think it's all about relativity. I mean, you can't decide when you're born. You can't decide what came before you, what influenced you. That stuff happens regardless of when your parents have sex. Yeah. You know, whatever. You're born into this world, you become a certain age, and things align and things become interesting to you. I mean, we now are in a world where music, if you look at it as an industry and a monetary thing, it isn't those things. So I don't question people's integrity. I think if people want to do things, they do it because they want to do it. They may have other motives. Maybe dudes want to be in bands because they want to get girls and get free booze or something. But at the end of the day, it's not about money. And so it's not necessarily motivated by the wrong thing. But everybody's reality is different than everyone else's because they live in a different circle. I'm starting to sound like Charles Manson, by the way. He always talked about individual circles and individuality and all this crazy stuff. And he wasn't even wrong. He was just so insane. It didn't make sense to people, but that's it. I don't see the change in a negative way. Certainly there's change, things evolve, but I also see just as much repeating, themes repeated, discoveries repeated. We call them discoveries, but I'm like, I've seen this three times, you know. That's part of growing old. Talk to your grandparents. They're going to tell you that they've watched human beings do things so many times that they just finally went, fuck it. I'm going to sit on the porch and drink a mint julep, you know, or whatever. I see evolution, but it's so diverse and it goes in so many directions that I don't know how to answer that question.
That was a great answer. That was absolutely perfect answer. Thank you.
Cool.
Mario asks, what's the difference between writing songs for Lagwagon and your solo stuff? I heard you write most of the songs for the band on your own. How do you decide, this song would be a perfect fit for Lagwagon, or this would be a better solo song? And he says, on the other hand, a lot of Lagwagon songs are also a great fit to your solo sets, like I Must Be Hateful or Violence, of course.
It's a really good question, and it's something I've answered a lot of times. And my answer probably changes because it's not something I try to consider, but I have considered a lot over the years, mostly because people ask. It has many answers because it's different almost every time. Sometimes I just know when I'm writing a song that it feels right, stripped down, and it's going to make a better song. Like, ideally, this would sound like a Tom Petty song, or this ideally would sound like Elliott Smith. Sometimes I just know this is made for a punk band, for like a hard-edged, aggressive, dynamic thing, like what Lagwagon does. And sometimes I go straight to the gate. But other times, I have to experiment a little bit, and sometimes other people figure it out for me. There's no one answer there. It can just be a matter of, there's definitely been times where I've taken songs to Lagwagon and it hasn't worked out.
Okay.
And then I took them back home and I made something out of them. It's interesting. I don't know.
Oh, cool. Thanks. Awesome answer.
Yeah.
Stefan asks, you tour with Lagwagon, Me First and the Gimme Gimmes, and solo. How many days of the year are you actually at home?
Not many. I moved into an apartment at the beginning of November last year. And I move out beginning of November this year. It will be a year. And at this point in the year, I have spent 20 nights in this apartment.
Wow.
Only 20. Yeah, I figured that out the other day because I was trying to figure out how many times I stayed here. And it's San Francisco, so it's so expensive. It makes me crazy to think about it. But I'm moving out. I'm moving my stuff into storage. And I'm going to go back on the, like, not having a place to live kind of thing, because all I do is tour. I just need somewhere to keep my stuff, which is a crazy thing to say at age 52.
It's also an amazing thing to say. Like, many people would dream of that, like being able to say that when they're 52.
Yeah, it's just, it's good. It is good. It's good.
Yeah. Let's leave it like this.
Little uncertainty. Yeah.
Awesome. It's Thank right. you. And that's the last question. Stefan also asks, that's a fun question, actually. If you were to make a cover record, preferably with Lagwagon, what would be the top three songs you would put on that cover record?
Oh, my God. Whew. I mean, come on. Can't answer that question off the top of your head. It's impossible.
Try. Just
that's
try.
The kind of thing. Oh, I mean, okay. Okay, well, there would be some Elliott Smith song that I would try to put in a format of, God, I mean, maybe it would just be three Elliott Smith songs. He's one of my favorite songwriters of all time. I love his music so much. I had this band, Bad Astronaut. We did the song Needle in the Hay. It worked perfectly as a heavy song to me. It just sounded right. That guy has so many songs that are so incredible that I would love to sing and add some juice to. Yeah, let's just say they'd be all Elliott Smith songs.
That's
because
cool.
There's a guy that kind of didn't get his due in my mind. I mean, people know who he is, but really, he died before he really got what he deserved as a songwriter. And that would be so cool because it's great when you take something that doesn't sound anything like what you do and you format it that way. But I know that his music would work great. I could do a whole record of that. God, maybe we should. Anyway, thanks, Stefan. Good idea, buddy. I'm on it.
Awesome. So cool. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for taking those questions. I hope people appreciate it.
No problem.
Yeah. And
I enjoy it.
So that's good to hear. Cool. So talking about the record again, it will be out on October 9th, right? Is that the right date? Or October 4th?
I thought it was October 4th.
I think it's the 4th. Right. 4th.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Exactly.
No, it's okay. I only know this because I'm in Minneapolis that day and I was trying to figure out where I was going to be.
Okay. So October 4th. Yeah. Yeah. And you are you're probably touring a lot. You're also touring Europe again, I think. Where exactly do you play? Like, especially for the bulk of my audience is like in the German speaking area, like Germany, Austria, Switzerland. So where can they see Lagwagon?
It's a short tour in November. We're just doing like a little run out there. And I think there's only a couple German shows, which is very unusual for a Lagwagon tour. But it's just a warm up. I mean, we wanted to get out to Europe as soon as possible after the release of the record. And we had a very short amount of time to plan. So we planned this like 2-week tour, I think we're doing. And I can't remember. but I know it starts in the UK, and there's maybe one too many UK shows. And there might be about four too few German shows. But we'll be back. You know, yeah. That's the thing. It's, you make a new record, you know, you kind of plan for either one really, really long tour, or you do maybe 2 to 3 tours. So we'll come back next spring as well. And I'm sure there'll be lots and lots of European shows, you know.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's good to hear. Yeah. I put all the dates in the show notes so people can look them up where exactly you play.
Cool.
So and there's also a pre-order available, I guess, for Railer.
Yeah, Fat always does that. I'm not sure what they did this time. I kind of stay out of those things.
Yeah, but I saw there is one, so I'll put all the links there, and people should get that. I was lucky to be like the guys from Uncle M sent me the record before our conversation, and people should really pre-order that record. I can say that. It's awesome. Yeah.
Well, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome. So is there anything you wanna say, something that's important to you right now that you want people to know or whatever? Like,
no. Well, I mean, you know, it's funny. It's I get asked that at the end of interviews very, very, very often. And I understand it. It's a very respectful way to end an interview, because sometimes there's things that weren't visited in the interview that you feel like you would like to promote or something.
Yeah.
However, this guy right here is so bad at this stuff. Like, I just like the conversation aspect of it. And this was quite nice, by the way. Thank you.
Thank you.
But I never really have anything to say regarding things to promote or whatever. You know what I mean?
I'm glad you added that. Like, don't leave it with, yeah, I don't have anything to say, because that's not true at all.
No, I never shut up. I never stop talking, but I need a conversation to do it. And I'm not great at promotion. It's been really nice. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. My pleasure. So, yeah, then let's end it like this. And I thank you again for taking the time. I had a lot of fun. This conversation has been great. And
it was cool.
Have fun on tour, and all the best with the record. And like, I hope there's going to be another, I don't know, 30 years or whatever with Lagwagon.
Yeah. Where do you live? What part of...
I live in Bavaria near Zwiesel. You've actually played in Zwiesel in the Jugendcafé.
You live near Zwiesel.
Yeah. Oise is a friend of mine.
Down.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. God, I love him.
Yeah.
I saw that he was one of the people you interviewed.
Yeah, his episode is actually still the most popular episode of mine by far.
People love that guy.
I don't know how many emails I got about this episode.
He's incredibly funny.
Yeah, I got hundreds of emails literally and messages about that episode. Everybody loves Oise. So, yeah.
Yeah, he's the best. He's one of my favorite human beings. He's so great. Well, I'm going to listen to it. I guess it's probably pretty easy for me to find it, right?
Yeah, it is. But the thing is, it's in German, so.
Oh, of course it is.
Yeah, actually not even German. It's Bavarian. Like.
I know. Yeah. Holy shit, that was pretty obvious. Oh, it's all right, man. My Bavarian dialect of German is quite good now. I won't understand any of it. I'll get like 5 words. Well, that sucks.
I'm sorry.
I mean, but I bet it's so funny, and it's in your natural dialect, and being from the same place, I bet it's incredible. I would love to have a transcript of that translated.
Yeah, maybe we should do that. Maybe you should do that, actually, because that episode
I don't know. I just know all the touring I did with Oise, and I assume that we're like not still going here.
Yeah,
I'm just talking to you now. But because I don't want to bore your listeners, if this is
I don't know, maybe we just leave that in, because that's interesting.
Sure. Well, Oise will like it if he hears this.
Yeah.
Yeah, but just touring with that guy, so funny. I miss him. I miss him so much. Yeah, he lives in Portland. He's out here now.
Exactly.
We kidnapped him.
Yeah, he did.
All right. Well, listen, man, I'll let you go, and thank you again. And this was fun.
Yeah, it was. Absolutely. Thank you so much. So, hope to see you again someday. Bye, Joey.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks. Take care. Bye.
Take care. Bye. So, that's it for today's episode. Hope you enjoyed it. I did, for sure. Hope you got something out of it. If you want to look up any of the stuff that we've been talking about, if you want to see the links to the new Lagwagon record or anything else we've been talking about, please go to benedicthein.com/ORP31. This is the website for this episode where you can find all the show notes. If you want to check out some of the older episodes of this podcast, please go to benedicthein.com/podcast. Most of those episodes are in German, but I actually did 3 English episodes, which are all great. So if you want to check those out, please do. And I would really appreciate it if you would go to iTunes or Apple Podcasts and leave us a review there, because it really helps me learn about what you like about this show. Also, if you leave us a good review, it helps with the visibility of this podcast. It helps us rank higher and reach more people, which is always great. So yeah, that would be awesome if you did that. That's it for today. Thank you for listening. Goodbye. Take care.